Of Herbert West, who was my friend in college and in afterlife, I can speak only with extreme terror. A terror that first gained its acute form more than 17 years ago, when we were in the third year of our studies at the Miskatonic University Medical School in Arkham. His wild theories on the nature of death and the possibility of overcoming it artificially were widely ridiculed by the faculty and by his fellow students, but the wonder and diabolism of his experiments fascinated me utterly.
Holding that all life is a chemical and physical process, and that the so-called soul is a myth, I believe that artificial reanimation of the dead depends only on the condition of the tissues. Unless actual decomposition has set in, a corpse fully equipped with organs may, with suitable measures, be set going again in the particular fashion known as life.
So you believe that the nature of life is essentially mechanistic?
Precisely! And I am convinced I will discover the means for reanimating the organic machinery of mankind by calculated chemical reaction after the failure of natural processes.
Herbert, my friend, are you in earnest?
I have already experimented with various animating solutions, killing and treating rabbits, guinea pigs, cats, dogs, and monkeys. I actually obtained signs of life in animals supposedly dead.
It soon became clear that he would require more varied animal subjects for further and more specialized progress.
I realize, of course, even a short period of death may be apt to cause impairment to psychic or intellectual life.
The slight deterioration of brain cells.
Exactly. I had hoped to find a reagent which would restore vitality before the actual advent of death, but observe. Even when the guinea pig has been freshly killed, and my solution is... just one more moment. Ah, there now. My solution is injected into the blood immediately after the extinction of life. There. You see? The natural and artificial life motions are compatible.
It's uncanny, Herbert. It's a miracle.
It's not a miracle. It's science.
It was not long after that West confided in me his resolution to get fresh human bodies in some manner and continue in secret the experiments he could no longer perform openly. But where to procure the anatomical specimens?
The Potter's Field.
Well, why not the cemetery at Christ Church? The obvious quality
of everyone buried in Christ Church is embalmed. That would be ruinous to the research.
Oh, yes, of course. The Potter's Field, then. I was by this time his active and enthralled assistant, and helped him make all his decisions, not only concerning the source of bodies, but concerning a suitable place for our loathsome work. It was I who thought of the deserted Chapman farmhouse beyond Meadow Hill.
It's far from any road and in sight of no other house.
Here we are.
The ground floor can be fitted as an operating room. We can borrow from the college. What we can't borrow from the college, I'll purchase anonymously in Boston. We should be able to gather our equipment undetected, save to expert eyes. If we are discovered, well, this whole enterprise is merely a chemical laboratory. Agreed?
Agreed. Disposing of bodies was always a nuisance. Even the small guinea pig bodies from early experiments in the boarding house. At the college, we used an incinerator, but the apparatus was too costly for our unauthorized laboratory. So we obtained spades and picks for the many burials we should have to make in the cellar.
a copy of the Times, please?
We followed the local death notices like ghouls, for our specimens demanded particular qualities.
What we want is a corpse interred soon after death, and without artificial preservation. Preferably free from malforming disease, and certainly with all organs present. Accident victim would be our best hope.
Not for many weeks did we hear anything suitable. The college had first choice in every case on corpses for teaching purposes. In the end, though, luck favored us for one day.
Aha! Here we are. An almost ideal case in the Potter's Field. An otherwise healthy young cleaning woman from the university drowned only yesterday in Summer's Pond and buried at the town's expense without delay or embalming.
That afternoon, we found the new grave and determined to begin work soon after midnight. It was a repulsive task that we undertook in the bleak, small hours. Even though we lacked, at that time, the special horror of graveyards which later experiences brought to us.
Right here.
Aha! The process of unearthing was slow and sordid. It might have been gruesomely poetical if we had been artists instead of scientists. Ah! Aha! Aha!
Hold the lantern here, will you? That's it.
Aha, yes.
Quickly now. Hold this. I'll climb down.
He removed the lid, dragging out and propping up the contents. I reached down and hauled the contents out of the grave. The affair made us rather nervous, especially the stiff form and vacant face of our first trophy.
Let's get her in the canvas bag.
We then managed to remove all traces of our visit. When we had patted down the last shovelful of earth, we set out with the specimen for the old Chapman place beyond Meadow Hill. On the improvised dissecting table in the old farmhouse, by the light of the powerful acetylene lamp, she, or rather, it was not very spectral looking. Now, with its eyes closed, the specimen looked more asleep than dead. We had at last what West had always longed for.
A real dead body of the ideal kind, ready for my solution, prepared especially for human use.
We knew that there was scarcely a chance for anything like complete success, and could not avoid hideous fears at possible grotesque results of partial animation. I myself still held some curious notions about the traditional soul of man and felt an awe at the secrets that might be told by one returning from the dead.
A larger specimen will require a greater quantity of fluid. Now move the light so I can see the vein in its arm. Here we go. Now, bind the incision. Hurry. Securely. Good. Now, we must be patient.
The waiting was agonizing. Every now and then, West applied his stethoscope to the specimen and bore the negative results philosophically. After about 3/4 of an hour... Well?
Shh, just a moment. No. Nothing. Solution is obviously inadequate. We'll have to make the adjustments to the formula immediately if we want to make another attempt tonight.
Understood. I have the lamp. So we left our silent guest on the slab in the dark and bent every energy to the mixing of a new solution in the adjacent laboratory, supervised by West with an almost fanatical care. The awful event was very sudden and wholly unexpected. I was pouring something from one test tube to another, and West was busy over the alcohol lamp, when from the pitch black room we had left, there burst the most appalling and demonic succession of cries that either of us had ever heard. Not more unutterable could have been the chaos of hellish sound if the pit itself had opened to release the agony of the damned, for in one inconceivable cacophony was centered all the supernal terror and unnatural despair of animate nature. Without a thought, we left the nearest nearest window like stricken animals, overturning the burning lamp, vaulting madly into the starred abyss of the rural night. I think we both shouted and screamed as we stumbled frantically towards the town. We managed to get to West's room, where we whispered until dawn, calming ourselves a little.
With rational theories and plans for investigation, so that we could sleep.
But that evening, two items appeared in the paper, wholly unrelated, made it again impossible for us to sleep. The old deserted Chapman house had inexplicably burned to an amorphous heap of ashes. That we could understand because of the upset lamp. But this we could not understand. An attempt had been made to disturb a new grave in the potter's field, as if by futile and spadeless clawing at the earth.
The body had not been quite fresh enough. A body must be very fresh indeed.
It would have been better if we could have known it was underground, for West could never afterward be able to shake off the maddening sensation of being hunted. And for the next 17 years, Herbert West would look frequently over his shoulder and complain of footsteps behind him.